Right, so we can call to order in our first, our first item is the approval of the March board agenda.
So moved.
I'll second.
We have, I'm making sure I'm not on mute because I muted myself. So I wanted to make sure I unmuted. So we have a first and we have a second. Any discussion? I'm going to go for the roll call vote at this point. Okay. Christy?
Yes.
Carla?
Yes.
Crystal?
Yes.
Dixie?
Yes.
And Lily?
Present.
Thank you. Motion carries with 5. And I didn't see Miss Denise Garcia. I keep strolling. I don't think she's joined us just yet. Agenda is approved.
Okay, thank you. Item number 3, public comment. Do we have anyone from the public either online or have either the principals or anyone been contacted?
Nobody has called the school, no.
Actually, I do have 3 communications. They're actually from teachers, and they asked that they be read during the public comment section.
Okay.
Okay, so the first one is from Mrs. Julia Pipping. She's the kindergarten teacher. And she says, hello, my name is Mrs. Julia Pipping. I am a kindergarten teacher at Ballington Academy for the Arts and Sciences in San Bernardino. I am very excited that the COVID numbers are dropping in San Bernardino County and that we are presented with this opportunity to possibly return to school in a hybrid situation. I am very grateful to our board for considering and thoughtfully weighing this crucial decision. This past year, it has been well documented that many students across our nations are suffering academically in the distance learning environment. While a few fortunate students have had an adult able to work with them one-on-one at home to ensure they understand and complete their studies, most families do not have that luxury. Many students are battling intermittent Wi-Fi, computer crashes, distracting background noise, and often their adults are other occupied working from home and unable to assist as much as needed. I am hopeful that this board will approve the hybrid learning option so that the students who need the support of the in-person classroom teacher will be able to come to school and get the more rigorous instruction that is just not possible over a Google Meet or Zoom meeting. Also, the students who are flourishing in distance learning environment can choose to keep that option. I have seen many of the safety measures that Ballington is implementing at our school site to ensure social distancing and safety. I am personally comfortable with the steps being taken to make this transition into hybrid as safe as possible. I endorse the hybrid option and know that most of the families of students in my classroom are hoping that this option will be made available to them. Thank you for listening to us. And then I have another comment from Mr. Jonathan Rios. As we head back into the classroom, it is important for our teachers to feel supported and appreciated. I would like to make a motion to the board that teachers would benefit from a bonus or some type of compensation in pay. Our teachers are dedicated to the continued success of our students and will go above and beyond to provide a safe and prosperous learning environment for all students. Going back into the classroom environment will require more effort on the part of the classroom teachers. Cleaning, social distancing, hybrid learning platforms, and unforeseen occurrences are what our teachers will have to deal with. The board should consider more financial compensation for these efforts. And then finally, I'm so sorry, give me just a second to pull it up. There it is. Distance learning has put a tremendous load of work onto the teacher. The time to plan, recreate teaching strategies, determine methods to keep students engaged in learning, documenting attendance and engagement, and accountability to the state has doubled or even tripled the teacher workload. The emotional and physical stress has increased due to all the dynamics of distance learning. Now to return to hybrid learning, there is another method to learn how to reach all students, and it increases the workload even more. Due to these reasons, teachers deserve a bonus or increase in pay. We work more hours and have shown that we are dedicated to educating our youth in many different facets. Please keep this in mind in your decisions tonight. And that is all the questions I received.
Did you, were you able to, I'm just taking notes of who the public comment came from. Did you mention, I didn't catch
that. I apologize. That last one was Diane Suzuki.
Okay.
Third grade teacher. Thank you.
Thank you.
So when we have public comments like that, is it, are we, do we discuss them right now or how do, I guess we haven't really had that many public comments, so I'm not sure.
So historically they're that, they're public comments. Now, if it was a comment specifically to what was on the agenda, and we do have the school reopening plan on the agenda, it's actually probably our primary topic for this evening, then we can of course provide some input and feedback based on those public comments at that point. That would be something that board members, you could take into consideration at that time. Ultimately, we are going to ask for a vote on our plan to reopen and the design that we're asking for approval on. So at that point, the public comment aligns with that. So then you could consider those comments as well in your decision.
The purpose of clarification, there are two issues. One is the reopening of the school and the return with a hybrid model. That's one issue. The second issue of a bonus or consideration for that, that's not on the agenda. And so that issue would be an issue that would be taken in terms of the record and can be discussed, but it can't be discussed in this meeting. It would have to be discussed in a future meeting because it wasn't on the agenda, as I understand it.
I have a question about that though, Gerald, Doreen. You know, is this a public comment or is this a professional comment? And if it's a professional comment that has to do with employment, should that be directed in a different venue than a board meeting?
The teachers are still members of the public. So legally speaking, they still have an opportunity to speak to whatever topic they wish during public comment.
I would think that would be a labor issue.
Yeah.
That's just me.
And we've received some public comment with El Centro teachers as well. And we took it with that, you know, that with it being a public comment. But thank you, Gerald, for clarifying that what is on the agenda tonight is the reopening recommendation or approval, request for approval. As a layer with that, then of course at a separate board meeting or through a separate process, we can discuss bonuses, which it sounds like was highlighted in some of their comments.
Thank you. Okay, let's move on to item four, consent agenda items. A, approval of the February minutes, which is attachment A. Does anyone have any comments on the February minutes?
Nope.
Okay, I'll move to approve the February minutes.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Roll call.
Okay. Dixie?
Yes.
Carla?
Yes.
Christy?
Yes.
Lily?
Yes.
Crystal? And Denise? I noticed Christy has joined us. Motion carries. Minutes are approved.
Thank you. Okay, item B is February financials. That is attachment B. Is there any kind of presentation for that?
Board members, you have before you the February financials. I don't think there are any additional surprises. As we have stated, the ADA is a hold harmless, as you can see. So our budget projections for revenue are consistent each month. As noted also in both financials, the schools being under a remote learning venue, we have actually been able to mitigate manage very conservatively our expenses. With that, both schools are actually coming in projecting at a greater net income than budget at this time of year, both San Bernardino and El Centro. Based on some of the discussion later on this evening, should we return to remote, then I believe we will probably begin to align more with our projected budget. I, for example, will be bringing additional cleaning on board and maybe an additional classified staff member. Otherwise, I believe that they're pretty much in line with the budget as projected.
Yeah, they appear to look great. I don't have any questions.
I don't have any questions either.
Lorraine, is there any area that that you would suggest that as the superintendent that you would have questions or concerns about with the budget as going forward throughout the through the remainder of the year? Is there any particular issues you'd like to share with us?
I would just encourage us again to be very mindful and prudent on expense management. I know San Bernardino in particular, you know, we came out of a hard, tough two prior years. And you know, I have to give plans and recommendations to the district with every single, you know, state report we submit about our plan to become positive again. So that would be my one thing, as I would echo, is really to begin to or consider, you know, staying in line with expense management. Thoughtfully or thankfully, we were approved for the deferral exemption. That said, you know, it does put us in a position where cash flow might not be as challenging as we thought. You know, we thought we were going to have to plan for a significant cash flow shortage from February to May. Now it looks like potentially, again, we'll submit for another exemption for the June deferral. Worst case scenario, we will not be approved for that, and I'm knocking on wood, and that would require us to really manage cash very, very closely those last 3 weeks of June. So again, just to summarize, really watch expenses, mitigate expenses. I kind of shared it with the principals. We got to keep running lean, so to speak. You know, no extra expenses, really leverage our what we have, our resources now. And even when we open up, if we move forward with opening up for hybrid, and then just really that month of June, I think is going to be the toughest for both schools, especially if we do not get approval for that deferral.
The money that we're getting if we are opening up, is that going to help, or is that restricted money?
That is pretty restricted. They require us to come up with a plan by June 2021, and they identify in the legislature pretty specific things. Positively, of course, it can be used on learning loss, which absolutely we're excited to have. because that speaks to curriculum, that speaks to additional staffing, you know, interventionists. So that's the exciting part. Unfortunately, it doesn't help us with, you know, the bottom line, so to speak. It's almost a neutral impact financially. Positively, programmatically, though, an increase in quality.
Okay. Yeah, I was sort of hoping a little bit, but I would think it would be restricted money, so.
I know. I was having the same thought, Carla. I was thinking about that, too. As a matter of fact, Shannon and I were discussing that before our meeting today, you know, about really being thoughtful and how we utilize even the restricted dollars.
Yeah, it add up quick with PPE stuff, and you know, before you think about it, then it's all used up.
Doreen, your best guess thinking in regard, and I'm asking you to put on your, you know, look in your crystal ball. I know, but with regard to the June exemption. If it were not to occur, okay, and I know you said to be conservative in the month of June, is there any thought that maybe just in case that we would start to maybe put a little bit of reserve aside in the months of April and May, you know, to kind of help with the offset rather than trying to absorb, you know, all of the shortfall in June, that maybe look at trying to put some just in case money aside. You guys talked about that at all?
We have, and we also, you know, that kind of goes hand in hand with being as lean as we possibly can, not incurring additional expenses so that we can conserve, so that come, you know, June, if we're significantly under budget and under the cash flow, then hopefully that will give us a little bit of a contingency to get us through. It's really those 3 weeks in June. Right. That right. That's our window. That's our risk. Is that 3 weeks?
Yeah. Okay. Good. Thank you.
Doreen, does this require a vote?
Yes. It requires an approval of the financials.
Okay. So I will move to approve the February financials for El Centro and San Bernardino.
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, roll call.
Dixie?
Yes.
Carla?
Yes.
Christy?
Yes.
Lily?
Yes.
Crystal?
Yes.
Denise?
Yes.
Motion passes, roll call vote of 6. Thank you.
Okay, we'll turn over the floor more so to Doreen for item 5, agenda action items.
Board members, this is probably, we come to you every single year. It's just a standard approval. We're asking for an approval to approve our selection of our independent auditor for 2020 to 2021. No surprises, we're recommending Wilkerson Hadley King. Just to provide a little bit of history for some of our board members that are new to this. Wilkerson Hadley King has been with Ballington Academies, our history. They are also the auditor that, the independent auditor that audits El Centro Elementary School District, our authorizer. So for our El Centro school. So historically, this has positioned us to be in a good light because based on their report, the superintendent is familiar with them. When we have to do presentations, he's familiar with their auditing firm, and it has allowed us, I think, ultimately in my opinion, to mitigate any additional concerns that the school district might have. That said, we are required to choose from a list of approved auditors that can audit schools. And this is one of the ones that is on the list. Not only are they on the list, they have a long history of auditing school districts, but also charter schools. And charter schools, albeit their funding is very similar to districts, there are still some instances that charter schools are treated differently or exempted from some of the school district rules. So they're very familiar with that, and it just helps support a more seamless audit. So that's just a little bit of history for you on the selection of this firm. I will enter, we would need a motion to approve going forward with using them as our independent auditor again. And this is for school year that we're in, 2020 to 2021. Running parallel, they're still wrapping up, hopefully in the next week or so, our audit from last school year. As we spoke at a couple board meetings ago, by now we would have had our school audit from last year. Given the state legislature, they did extend that deadline to March 31st. I think every single school district, as well as charter school, is taking the benefit of that extension. So that should be coming before you very probably at our April board meeting for a ratification.
Doreen, I'm going to ask this question of Carla. Carla, in terms of audit best practices, in terms of periods of time in which you use the same auditor, whether or not there is audit firm. You can use the same audit firm, but there often is a requirement that you rotate the oversight partner.
7 years.
What is it?
7 years.
Every 7 years. So I just want to make sure in regards to it, Doreen, whether or not we have been in the relationship 7 years, not that we have to change the firm, but it is the oversight partner that might have to rotate. And so do you know whether or not it has been 7 years, and then whether they've rotated a partner in any time in between that 7 year period?
Yes, it has been 7 years because we have used the same audit firm since, our beginning. One of the reasons why we selected this audit firm at the time, we didn't have San Bernardino as our charter, as a sister charter. We only had El Centro, and this has always been El Centro's auditor, as well as many of the other, at the time, districts in the county. So that was one of our primary, I want to say, decision focus to select this auditor. Initially, it was actually Mr. Wilkerson was the partner that guided the process. I would say Mr. Sproul has come in to be the official auditor, I want to say in the last 4 to 5 years. Okay. Prior to him, again, it was Mr. Wilkinson. And he initially, when it transitioned, he did more of the, I want to say, initial data gathering, but he wasn't the person that, I guess I want to say, the person that authorized the audit, for lack of a better word. Since, though, he has taken a more central role, and we actually have gotten another individual that does the data gathering over the last year, and we saw him this last year.
Okay.
So Doreen, have you discussed it with them? If not, maybe it would be a great idea, just to clear it up and find out if we're still okay.
Sure. Yeah. I can discuss it.
And it's not changing firms. It's just the partner that oversees and signs off on the audit is all we're talking about. So just to make sure we don't have any glitches with the district or anybody else that might look at it. So they've been doing a fabulous job for us. And definitely, I think politically, it is a good move to have them in that regard. But just to make sure we deal with best practices in terms of oversight.
Well, I mean, I've been on the board quite a long time now, and we have been extremely happy with the auditors, and they have accommodated us with all the different areas that we want to improve, you know, comparative statements and everything else. So I really would recommend them again.
Carla, I think you and I had the discussion, I want to say a couple years ago as well, that they seemed cost effective as well.
Oh, definitely.
When we talked a little bit about it.
Yes. So yeah, I'll definitely make a motion to approve them for this audit year.
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Roll call.
Dixie?
Yes.
Carla?
Yes.
Christy?
Yes.
Lily?
Yes.
Crystal?
Yes.
And Denise?
Yes.
Okay. Motion passes. Thank you. With 6 roll call votes. So the next piece on the agenda is an approval of our safety plan. I know we brought this to you back in May. It requires an annual approval from the board of directors. Our current safety plan, aligns, the CDE publishes a template, and we basically followed the template. It has been, again, reviewed by the attorneys. Small changes that have been updated, for example, are you know, phone numbers for emergency personnel, local context. For the most part, all of the required items have stayed very similar. One of the things that we have added and will become an addendum to our safety plan, our school safety plan, are all of our procedures for COVID, including our cleaning processes, our PPE requirements, our social distancing, how we will ensure safety and health of our students, our families, and our staff. So that would be one thing that we would attach as an addendum. Other than that, there probably hasn't been a significant amount of changes to this plan, other than, again, I know Mr. Anderson was working on updating latest phone numbers, as well as Ms. Brandon, just to make sure they're current.
Motion to approve?
Yes. I'll second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Roll call, Dixie?
Yes.
Carla?
Yep.
Christy?
Yes.
Lily?
Yes.
Crystal?
Yes.
And Denise?
Yes.
Motion passes with 6 roll call. Approved vote. And now we're on the big topic, right? The reopening, the school reopening plan. So I know that last month, board members, we really began the discussion on this whole school reopening process with COVID. I tried to actually summarize for you the key issues last month. I tried to again summarize this month for you some of those key issues, as well as what's happening out there, right? I provided you with an executive order from President Biden saying, you know, health and safety is paramount, but also access to a high quality education for both early childhood education as well as school age is essential. in his commitment to getting schools reopened so that children can have access and we can mitigate learning loss. In addition to that, we also have seen around us at the state level a passing of legislature that really, although the governor, I don't think the timeline is as aggressive as the governor had initially hoped. It still is a commitment to school reopening, along with additional funding to incentivize that school opening, right? So much too, he provides us with dates, or the legislature provides us with dates, by which point we have to be offer on-site instruction, and almost somewhat, and this is just my language, not their language by any means, penalizing the schools with a decrease in funding as the days go by that they're not offering in-person instruction. Ultimately, by May 15, if you haven't offered in-person instruction, you cannot have access to this incentivized funding. So we know that that's happening around us. We're also seeing multiple school districts come to agreements. LA Unified School District just came to an agreement on opening and what it would take, and when they were going to open and what it would look like. I believe San Diego Unified did as well, one of another pretty large school systems in our state. As it relates to us, we had always started out with being really committed to what our authorizer, or following the lead of our local community and our authorizer. It appears at this point, San Bernardino is saying they're not going to tap in for the money. They can keep the money. They don't need it. They're still staying remote to the end of the school year. El Centro, we just received word. Their board actually approved it just this last week, of a reopening plan there. Their reopening plan is proposed to do a hybrid approach, cohort A and cohort B. They're offering 2 hours twice a week of on-site learning for their students, and they're only starting with TK through first grade, I believe. So that was something that they had come out and had shared with us. They haven't identified the actual start date. They're going back and forth between around March 29, or they might push it off to spring break. Or after spring break. So that's really kind of what's swirling around us. A commitment on the federal level to provide on-site instruction, a commitment with funding at the state level. And then as we begin to see our local companion districts, as well as our authorizer, begin to really make plans to reopen and really very clear guidelines in AB 86 on what is required to be able to get the funding and to be able to have access to that funding. I had provided you in your packet just a listing of dates, kind of a timeline of those dates and what will happen with those tasks. Ultimately, in order to be eligible to receive the full incentivized funding, schools have to be offering on-site instruction by March 31st. There's some belief or by April 1st. We kind of interpreted it by March 31st just to play safe with that. Also, again, if the school offers no on-site instruction, they by May 15, they lose all funding. And then any day after, for every single day after April 1st, they don't offer, they lose 1% of their funding. Ultimately, they're requesting, should you have access to that funding, you develop a plan. And that plan, again, has to describe how you're going to use the funds, and it has to be board approved by June 1st. So that just tries to give somewhat of a framework for where we're at and what's really guiding this whole process. I'll stop there and ask if there's any questions on that.
Yes,
Again, I gave very high level. There's lots and lots of details in that.
I have a clarification question. You had said that the authorizer is foregoing the funds, but we're still talking, but in the subsequent charts, we're still talking about opening San Bernardino. So does that mean that even if San Bernardino Unified School District stays 100% remote, we could still open? Or
yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And then just because the authorizer wouldn't be in favor of it, we would still get the funding?
Correct. We as an independent charter school, we would open. The funding comes directly to the charter school. If we decided not to open, then we would for lack of a better word, I don't like it, penalized. You know, we wouldn't have access to the funding. I'll say it that.
We get docked.
And I can also mention, Christy, that the district as a whole, San Bernardino City Unified, is supporting the charters that choose to open. They think it's a great idea. They think it's a wonderful idea. It just doesn't work for them.
Okay. I get it. Thank you.
You're welcome. So with that said, go ahead.
Just a quick question. In terms of you and the teachers and the A and B cohort and the 2 hours of on-site instruction, what's your thinking about that 2-hour window? And the whether or not that's sufficient, by the time people get in, get settled and do something, it's time to start thinking about going home. I'm just wondering what the principals and your thoughts are on that 2-hour window.
So we had seen this swirl of information come down. Shannon and Bill and I had met probably, I want to say, guys, like a week ago or 2 weeks ago. This was prior to any feedback from the school district. We opted to go with the 4 hours. We didn't want to go full day, considering, exposure and easing back into it. But we did feel that 4 hours, and it aligned with what our current distance learning plan is. So we tried to keep it very consistent. This is what we're doing for distance learning. This is how we're going to transition onto the on-site. And then we felt that that was enough time for learning. We knew that we needed to bring the union along with this as well for El Centro. So we had began to reach out to them. We haven't had any formalized discussions with them at that point. It was all just recommendations. It was all trying to get, ready, because now it seemed like the state truly did have a date and they were not moving back on it, much like we saw in the past. They said February 1st and then they pulled back and they're like, no, now it's April 1st. So we knew we had to do that. We hadn't heard anything again from El Centro. So we basically came up with our plan to be ready. We got the word from El Centro just this week. I emailed Shannon and I emailed Bill what their thoughts were on that. And I can let them speak, but they immediately said not 2 hours. It just didn't make sense. They were absolutely concerned about, the learning loss, the getting set up and then, having to pick them up, all of the parent impacts that went along with that. Again, I offered that to them knowing, we talked a lot about, we still have to work this through for El Centro, the union. And if the majority of the geography in El Centro is doing it this way, how is that going to impact us? So we did have that discussion. I'll let Shannon and Bill speak though, because I feel like it was a resounding no to the 2 hours. And then Bill, you can even share at that point, we were actually trying to do on March 31st and on April 1st, just like a 1-hour orientation for families, just to be sensitive to the legislation and also sensitive to operations and trying to get back into school. And even the teachers, I'll let Bill share, didn't want to do an hour, they wanted to. So I'll be quiet at this point and turn it over to you guys.
Actually, yeah. I think Doreen nailed it. And Mr. McFadden, you as well, there's not much that could get done in 2 hours. By the time everyone was settled, it would be time to pack up. So yeah, Bill and I both said, you know, the 4 hours is better for our students. And the 4 hours I think is perfect because it does kind of ease us in and eases the students in to the new procedures they have to learn and get used to. And if we would do the full 7 hours, then we would have to add lunch into that with a full lunch break for teachers and all the movement involved in that. And personally, I think that's too big of a learning curve for operations too quickly. So I think starting with this 4 hours is just perfect. And I know for my site, with the possibility that the board would approve this plan, we've redone the schedule. So any pullout programs like art and music and things like that would still happen remotely, and the teachers would still have that 4 hour block for academic instruction for the students. And then there was one other piece that Doreen mentioned that flew out of my head and I can't remember what it is, but I'm sure Bill will pick it up.
Yeah, another thing to take into consideration is the people, you know, we're looking at 60-40, maybe a 60, you know, 40 split of people who don't want to come back and will not. So they're going to be digital. So we also had to take into account the fact that to expect the children to be on screen for a full day would be very taxing for them as well. You know, so that would be a detriment, you know, and we've already established our schedule. So this way we wouldn't have to tweak the schedule and make the changes, you know, so in a sense, the children are used to this schedule. Parents are used to this schedule. We don't have to keep the children on the screen all day, you know, so we took that into consideration. And FYI, McCabe started yesterday, and I got word that Imperial actually started today with their hybrid plan. So, you know, schools are opening up in the Valley.
And just to clarify what Bill said, both of our schools are about 60-40 split, with 60% wanting to come back in person and 40% choosing to stay distanced, remote.
We did through a parent survey. Bill, do you want to speak to how our initial plan to do a 1 hour orientation and then your team actually thought that was not going to work for them?
The teachers got to, you know, we talked about it in our last staff meeting and everything. And I spoke about a 1 hour and they all agreed that no, we can't do that. We want to instruct, you know, we want to get in there and we want to roll up our sleeves and we want to do what we have to do. You know, and they thought that, you know, since the children who would be digital were at home, that they could assign the asynchronous assignments that would allow them to say, all right, take the other group out and take the tour. And, you know, we will do a lot of practicing bathroom breaks and socially distancing and, you know, getting used to, you know, the protocols with cleanliness and everything. And, you know, that's going to take time, but the teachers were very adamant about wanting to instruct, you know, and continue the instruction and not interfering with the flow that's going on right now. So they look at it as an opportunity to really, again, as Ms. Shannon spoke about the learning loss, you know, we're already working on RTI and hunkering down as to that. You know, we're actually getting ready for, and I'll talk about this later, but our last MAP benchmark assessment. So it'll be interesting to use that data as we go into the last quarter.
And I believe too in the hybrid, I mean, we were just initially looking at some of the numbers and with, you know, being both schools 60-40, we're looking at probably maybe 10 kids at the most in mm-hmm. group settings on Monday, Tuesday. Mm-hmm. So that in itself, we believe is going to help support some of those much needed interventions as well.
Actually, it'll probably be less than that. You know, I mean, we have classes that might have 12 and we can split them in half. Mm-hmm. So a Monday, Tuesday will be 6 and a Wednesday, Thursday will be 6. So that'll give us a.
I agree with Bill that definitely gives us the opportunity for some intensive instruction. Yeah. It's interesting. The teachers in San Bernardino had a little bit of a different take on that orientation on March 31st and April 1st. Because it's a Wednesday and Thursday, they felt that it's going to be different. The schedule itself, you know, the days the hybrid students would come would be different than what would be their regular hybrid schedule. And they thought they didn't want to confuse or anything like that. So they're actually on board with the orientation piece because they also felt that any instruction they do would not stick because they're immediately turning around and going on spring break. So San Bernardino teachers are actually on board with the hour orientation that would work for parents. You know, I'd be working with the parents out in the parking lot, staying distanced, answering their questions while teachers are inside for that hour, walking students through procedures. And this is how we get water. And this is how we walk down the hallway. And these are the circles to stand on and things like that.
So before you, we did go ahead and do a very quick survey with our families. Again, we gave probably about a week's worth of time of that, just to get their feedback on if they would like to stay in distance learning or if they would be willing to participate in. And at the time we were going with 4 hours. We thought that would be the best. And this is really, you can really see it's almost neck and neck at both schools, which is very interesting. You know, whether it's the county of Imperial or the county of San Bernardino, they're very slight differences. I would say about a 60% return rate on the survey for both schools. I think El Centro was 59 and San Bernardino was like 60.2 or something like that. For the most part, though, they were both about 60%. So you can really see where the families are coming from on this.
And we did let parents know, or families know, guardians know, that if we can't get a hold of them, or if they don't take the survey, I've sent it out via email, I've posted it on Class Dojo. But we've let the families know that if they choose not to participate in the survey, that we are going to assume they choose distance learning. But we have a really good response rate.
Yeah, we're still tracking parents down. You know, Ms. Dora was able to, you know, disaggregate the data and the parents and separate them. And we sent out a email individually to the parents we had emails with that did not do that. And then the next thing we'll do is have the teachers send out remind tomorrow to the parents who haven't responded as well. You know, so we still have some parents out there that need to respond. So we'll hunt them down.
Yeah. We eventually find everyone.
Yeah.
Three. What issues are you going to talk to the union about?
Because it's a change, just like when we had a transition to remote, it's a change in work status. We have to negotiate or discuss really the idea of our plan and buying off into going into a hybrid scenario, moving from remote and going back into a hybrid. They will need to provide feedback on, you know, the Monday, Tuesday, the Wednesday, Thursday, as well as how many hours and some the criteria for coming back. For example, we want to make sure all teachers are vaccinated before we return. You know, we need to have classrooms cleaned. This was a big one, even going into remote learning. We want our classrooms cleaned after we use them, but we don't want to be on site when the cleaning occurs. So we had to make sure, you know, the custodial team came in after they had left if they needed to work in their room for things like that.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. we really, our intent was to make it as seamless as potentially possible. In other words, not adding lunch again. We're actually maintaining the same system that we have for meals now. So families are familiar with that. They'll pick up their meals for the week on the same day, the same way. And then also the same hours. So our schedule could be the same, really, really trying to make it as seamless as possible. Again, you know, we're coming, depending, we're, you know, we come back March 31st, we start spring break April 2nd. So we're on an already scheduled spring break April 2nd through April 11th. So then that Monday, we're back on April 12th. We've only got a couple weeks and we begin testing. So, and then that's the end of the school year. So really, you know, just to try to make ease into this and make this as seamless as potentially possible.
And then also we think about this for next year as well. You know, we don't know where we'll be next year, but you know, this is an opportunity for us to tighten up, you know, as we've talked, my teachers and I have talked about, you know, the flexibility of it, but also learning. You know, there's going to be a learning curve, just like there's been a learning curve, and everybody has to understand that, you know. But Doreen, with regard to the lunch and pickup, you know, there will be a change for us. We won't disseminate that on a Monday. We'll do that on a Friday. But I've been in communication with Mr. Christian lately, and there seems to, I'm still in negotiation with the high school with breakfasts. You know, there seems to be an issue if we were to hand out breakfast and then somebody was to eat breakfast. So I'm still processing that with them, but we do plan on giving a week's worth of the food on Friday as opposed to Monday, so that the Monday students, Monday, Tuesday, will have a lunch and a breakfast available. So that's going to be the one change.
Okay. I would imagine too, with 4 hours at a time, it's easier for the parents, you know, to bring the kids and pick them up instead of for the 2 hours.
Right.
Yeah. And I think the parent situation, it varies. I know that, you know, we have a large number of parents that are able to be home with their students, but we also have a large population that are working families. And those families, whether it's 2 hours or 4 hours, it's difficult because they can't stop in the middle of their workday and come pick up their child. And I empathize with them quite a bit. I actually am in the same situation at my home with my child, because you know, I can't drop everything I'm doing and go pick them up from school in the middle of the day. So I'm working with individual families on addressing that. But Carla, I think you're right. 2 hours would have been a lot more challenging than the 4 hours.
And definitely.
Great. I had my concerns as well. I, as a parent, I would not drive to drop off my kids 2 hours a day. I would prefer to, and I spoke with them as well about it, and they prefer to stay home for the 2 hours. So thank you for proposing the 4 hours, because 2 hours isn't enough children to be in class or with the parents. It's just too much pressure and overwhelming in such a short time span.
Yeah, I agree. It's kind of like you just dropping them off, picking them up, and they're on a merry-go-round. And then they don't have a sense of the school anymore, or the sense of being in a class anymore. You know, again, it's that idea of trying to create the foundation for them again, that, hey, we're still there, you know, and we're going to spend some time together, and you know, and to provide that opportunity to make contact with the teachers so that they have that sense of safety in school community again. Mm-hmm. You know, 2 hours would be like, boom, boom. Okay, get out. You're done. You know, that's, to me, it's not learning. It's just a revolving door, you know.
So getting back with the transportation, do you, Bill and Shannon, know how much problem it will be for the parents?
So far for San Bernardino, I've had 3 families reach out, and one of them said they would just prefer to stay home, that, you know, they're not comfortable carpooling. They would just prefer to stay home. And the other two, I just let them talk it out and we came up with solutions. One of them is going to try carpooling. You know, their child will stay in the back seat and masked, and they will attempt carpooling. And the other one sort of, I think, figured it out on her own.
Okay.
But what I'm happy about is each one of them reached out to me directly. You know, they sent me a message directly saying, Miss Shannon, we're not sure what to do. And we just, you know, I let them brainstorm and we just let them vent. And we talked it out and found a solution that worked for that family.
Great. Bill?
Well, yeah, you know,
Bill.
Yeah, go ahead. That's fine. Go right ahead.
I know for my personal situation as a parent, my husband and I will have a 2-hour turnaround time from the time we have to leave work to pick them up, to take them home, and to get back to work, because of, it's a logistic thing for us only because of where we work, where we live, and where the school is located. Yeah. So whether it's 2 hours or 4 hours, I mean, with it being 2 hours, you know, one of us could take them, the other one stay home, go in later, pick them up, take them back. But me personally, I'm still looking at an issue logistically and time. By the time I get to work, I work about 2 hours. I'm going to turn around, have to head back to El Centro, which is about a 25 minute drive from where I work, and then pick them up. We live about 25, 30 minutes from the school, get them home, get them fed, logging back in at 1 o'clock, and then hightailing it back to work, which is about 40 minutes away. So I speak on behalf of the other parents that you know, may say 4 hours is difficult. Mm-hmm. 2 hours would be just as difficult, but I look at it as a sacrifice because the kids have been home long enough, and we're still scratching our heads trying to figure out what we're going to do. I don't know if we're going to draw straws, and he's going to take them one day and I'll take them another. We're not quite sure how we're going to make this work, but the kids will be there because they need to be there. They need to be in class. They need to get back to some sense of pre-COVID normalcy where they're face-to-face with their teachers. And if they have a problem, it's, you know, raising their hand and the teacher's there. And it's not waiting for mom and dad to get home from work to try to figure something out to help them with their homework. So yay, in a sense, but again, at the same time, it's going to be difficult. So I may not be there right at the school at 12:15. If I get stuck by, you know, an employee that needs my assistance, we're going to figure it out.
We'll figure it out. You can talk to me about that. Okay. We'll have a conversation and we'll see, you know, we can help each other out. Okay. I really mean that. Okay.
I mean, if we have to hire, I know there's a lot of college kids that aren't going back to school, and we've got our eye on one, and she may be able to, you know, it's just 2 days a week. So we're thinking about, you know, here's some money for when you do go back to college, will you pick up the kids and take them home? So we're looking at different, we have some options, but you know, I do feel for the parents that are in the same situation. You know, if they're on 12-hour shifts and they normally have so-and-so take care of them, but so-and-so is not able to anymore. Or again, so-and-so hasn't been vaccinated, or the family hasn't been vaccinated. You still have that issue at hand too, where you just can't, you know, have the sitter pick up where we left off last year. So I see all sides to this. We're just going to make it work somehow, some way it's going to work. I'm trying to think positive.
Yes. And, you know, I know as we go along the road, we'll all be dealing with all of this as a school. So, you know, I guess, again, the key word is flexibility and supporting each other as we do that. Okay, Ms. Garcia. And I know we can. Okay. I really do.
Definitely.
Really
Definitely.
Do.
I just want to commend you, Bill, on that, because I mean, I think that there is really going to need to be that kind of responsiveness. Mm-hmm. And you as well, Shannon. I'm not just saying it just because Bill was talking though, because this is going to be tough for parents.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, and finding the balance may take a minute, and so us looking at how we can support them in this transition, I think is going to be critically important. So, I think that's a big plus And I think it will pay dividends as we go into next school year. Mm-hmm. I mean, I really do. So kudos to both of you in that. Well,
and thank you, Mr. McFadden. I'm grateful for that. But I mean, I know that I sound like a broken record. I've been saying it pretty consistently for the last 5 years, is that that's what makes our school unique. And it's what makes us special, is that Bill and I know our families, and we're on a first name basis with our families, and we know what they need. And more importantly, they feel comfortable coming to us and telling us what they need, and we can help them take care of it. Yeah. So I do believe that that is one of our strengths.
Yeah. A couple of questions I did want to ask, though, between Doreen and Shannon and Phil. One is with regard to this one-time money and the ventilation system that's there in the building that we have. We actually are lessees, okay, on each one of our properties. Are we having conversation, or do we need to have conversation with the lessors in terms of what they might apply for or seek to get assistance for in regards to the ventilation system improvements? That being one thing, because that is something that is available, and it's a little different from us and also the district. So that just whether we need to create some kind of conversation around that. The second thing I wanted to just ask a question about is what will be our approach to kind of some of the CDC modifications in terms of social distancing, 3 feet versus 6 feet? What are your thoughts on that? And how should we be thinking about that kind of going forward?
I can address that one if Doreen and Bill are okay.
Yeah.
Because I spent Monday building a lot of things on the floor in the cafeteria, and they're putting things together. For the social distancing piece, actually the first round of, or maybe it was the San Bernardino County CARES money, one of the CARES funds, we were able to get shields. For the front desk, for the desks, we have what I call flower shields. They're actually a crisscross of shields that creates kind of a triangular area for each student. And now that we're proposing this hybrid situation, we know that we'll have so few numbers that it could be just two students to that shield that has four spaces, so they can be apart from each other that way. I was able to obtain floor stickers that are removable. So students will have a sticker to stand on when they're lining up in the hallways. And so it's those types of resources that we have that will not only help them learn to stay 6 feet apart, but if there is an instance where they can't, we have those dividers to keep everybody safe, both the students and the teachers. We also use those funds to get portable sinks in the classroom and touchless soap dispensers, so children and teachers can wash their hands. We have water dispensers, because we won't be able to use the water fountains safely, and disposable cups that go with it. So that's safe, things like that. But though, like I said, all of that was paid for with previous CARES funds.
I need to separate, though, when you say we, you know, some of the things that you have done, we
being San Bernardino.
Right. It's very important to be that, because we have hand sanitizers in every classroom. We do not mm-hmm. have water stations. We do not, you know, so it's very important that we separate the different things. We do have class, you know, the dividers as well. But as far as the soap and water dispensers and things, no, we have hand sanitizers in the classrooms. So there will be slight differences in that. I just want to be clear.
Yeah. And also, board members, I had put in your board packet some of pictures that show some of the dividers that were just spoke about, so you can see how we're actually setting up the classrooms. And again, some of the differences are going to be driven by the different facilities as well.
Doreen, let's talk a little bit more about this ventilation issue and owners versus what kind of conversation we might have around what they will possibly do and what they might consider.
Gerald, one of the things that I'm trying to look into right now is called a SEAS grant, all right? It's coming down, I think, from the state as far as that, and it has to do with, you know, serving different communities, and one of the things that the money can be used for would be to air purify your HVAC system, as well as do things of that nature. So I'm investigating what that looks like and if we're eligible for it right now. It would be kind of along the lines of the Prop 39 grant, which allowed us to get the new air conditioners and allowed us to get the new doors and windows. So I'm investigating something like that. If that's something that we can qualify for, I'll keep you posted on it. But if not, I think if we need to pursue the owner, that's definitely something that's there. But you know, I know who our leaser is.
Yeah.
And sometimes it becomes difficult. But you know,
we actually had a really good discussion with the owner on the Prop 38 funds because we did do significant upgrades to his facility. And he's an interesting owner. I'll just put it like that. I think he gave us some you're familiar with him. So he gave us some small reprieve, I think, on some small lease abatement 1 month. But if you were to really compare the value, he definitely got a significant upgrade to his asset versus, you know, what he gave us back in return. So we can begin those discussions and just know he's an interesting owner. On the flip side, San Bernardino's owner has been more extremely
so nice,
responsive and willing to work, just almost again like night and day between the two.
Well, I'm just thinking that just from an economic point of view, you've got a lease negotiations coming up before too long, okay? And so I think that discussion really structuring it around his economic benefit, because we do have a pretty significant building right down the street, okay? And I mean, I think we can have a different kind of conversation, because I understand Stan, he is a difficult bird, excuse me, a difficult person, okay, in that regard. I'm just saying, let's think about this, because if we stay in that building, keeping those children safe and having proper ventilation is an important, you know, thing for us to look at. And we just can't let somebody off the hook and say, oh, I'm not going to do that. So let's just talk about it, okay? Bill, I really appreciate you going after that. So please keep me abreast, and if there's anything that I can do to be of help in that regard and pursuing that grant, please let me know. And Doreen, let's you and Bill and I talk about a strategy for that owner, okay?
Okay, we'll talk.
Okay. Yep.
So, if I may transition, board members, I tried to outline, which I feel like we talked through a lot of them. I tried to outline the decision options before you, and I broke it into four, actually. Almost it's just remain the same, offer no on-site instruction. And I tried to do pros and cons, you know, minimal risk. We model as San Bernardino authorizer. The very big downside, of course, is we lose all the funding. I tried to provide to you what that would look like. The recommended as of now, and again, it could potentially change. One day they posted one amount, and then the next day they posted a slightly different amount. So I know they're still working out some of the allocations, but the potential funding for this incentive funding for San Bernardino is close to $400,382. And then for El Centro, it is the $686,000. That is just the funding that's being attributed. And they're calling it ESSER III funding, attributed to this incentivized funding. The second piece is opening by April 1st, as they had asked us to do. I outlined some of the potential pros and cons of those. At the time, we were not aware that El Centro was going to open. Now we are aware of that. So at least from the county perspective of Imperial, we appear to be in line with what the other schools are doing, albeit San Bernardino City is not opening. Many of the charters are opening or have already opened. So again, we would be in line with them. I also gave a potential of not opening till after spring break, and what that would look like. And then of course, the fourth potential option is to open at a much later date, but open by May 15 to at least capitalize on some of those dollars. I also provided you with a sheet of projected amounts, as well as what it would translate into loss. The first part about it, I know that over the last year, I feel like there's been so much relief funding coming down in different pockets and different names and different, different types of grants. So I tried to really give you a succinct table on some of that relief funding that came down. The first was, of course, the CARES, way back when it all started back in March. The allocations for each of the school were, San Bernardino was about $63,000. El Centro was about $90,000. We spoke a little bit about that. Bill used some of that money for technology, for remote learning. Likewise, Shannon did as well as PPE funding, buying some initial of the cleaning, some of the initial barriers at the school with sanitization. The next piece that really came in was the stimulus bill that was signed back in December by President Trump, and they're calling that the second ESSER. And that was about $173,000 for San Bernardino and about $300,000 for El Centro. That just was signed in December. I don't even believe we got an initial allotment of it at this point. And then lastly, the third is this huge amount of, that's really tied to this. You got to be open by April 1st, or you slowly but surely begin to be penalized for every day you're not open. So I just tried to, out of all of the different funding parts and all of the moving targets, really bring it into you in kind of a succinct picture. So hopefully that is helpful. Any questions on that?
I have a question. I think I asked the same or similar question last month of Shannon and Bill about where the teachers are with coming back. My recollection is last month from both sites, teachers were enthusiastic and wanting to come back. Is that still the case, or is there any further developments with that, with regard to, they want to wait for the vaccine or anything like that?
Go right ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry, Bill. Thank you. San Bernardino teachers, I think in general, are happy to come back. They know it's needed. They want to do what's best for their students. We have a couple that are nervous and they're just talking about, what can I do? How can we make it work? And then we have a few more. Yeah, those are the couple that are nervous about health and safety. And then we have a few more. Again, they're anxious to come back. They know that it's best for kids, but they're very nervous about the learning curve and being overwhelmed and trying to balance the in-person students with the students at home and things like that. And I think that we'll kind of get a better sense of where they are once they do it for a couple of weeks. It's the unknown that's making them nervous.
And as far as my, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Bill, I'm so sorry. I was gonna say both those things account for a little less than half of the staff.
And for our school, you know, as far as conversations I've had, many of the teachers are working on getting their vaccines right now. In fact, you know, I think everybody who wanted to get them has gotten them. We have a small percentage of teachers who don't want to have the vaccine. You know, I haven't had any conversations with them about how they don't feel uncomfortable coming back if we're socially distanced as we're setting up the classrooms. You know, they were working last week to set up the classrooms. I think they feel more confident now looking at the spaces. You know, if you look at some of the pictures you have there, you can see, you know, a lot of protection that we're dealing with. And then the cycle cleaning and the fogging at the end of the day, you know, these are all things that I think contribute to them feeling more at ease. You know, I do have a meeting with them this Friday, so we'll talk a little bit deeper as to where they stand. And, you know, I'll get a little bit more of a gestalt picture of where they are. But as is right now, as Ms. Shannon is saying, you know, that, you know, they miss the kids. They miss that contact in school, just like the kids do, you know. So I feel, you know, they're kind of looking forward to coming back. And again, a little, you know, hesitant and tentative as well, you know. But again, it's the unknown, and it's what we need to do, you know, to help each other out. You know, I mean, that's how I look at it. And, you know, I'm not feeling any resistance. I haven't had anybody refusing, like Mr. Anderson, I refuse to come in. You know, they're ready to do the job, you know, and that's what I love about them. You know, they roll up their sleeves and they make it happen, you know. So that's so far where I am. And, you know, after this Friday meeting, we'll have a little bit more insight.
No, I appreciate that. Thank you. I think that has been one of my kind of greatest questions about that, because I mean, parents have been dealt an unbelievably difficult hand with this, but they can still decide. They still have the decision to go or not, or send their kids or not send their kids. But if we vote to go back on a particular date, the teachers pretty much have to go back. So I'm particularly sensitive to that. And that's why I ask. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, I would suggest that we do open on April 1 for the following reasons. I mean, the funding, if we open on April 1, we'll get the full amount. If we decide to open later, we still have to do all the security measures, and then we get less funding. And then by April 1, we hope that the teachers have gotten their vaccinations. And 60% of the parents would like to get their children to get back to school. And I mean, like Christy said, some parents, and Shannon said, some parents don't. I mean, they have the option to do that. So that's why I recommend we open by April 1.
Carla, are you saying April 1st or March 31st so that we can
April
have-
April 1st.
Well, I thought we were agreed. I thought it was March 31st. At least that was the day I gave my staff. Are we talking April 1st?
Oh, yeah, yeah. March 31st.
Okay.
That's what I was thinking as well. It was March 31st for A and April 1st for B. So it was orientation for both groups.
Yes.
Okay. I just wanted to clarify that just to make sure before anybody seconds the motion.
You're right, Denise. March 31st.
If that was Carla's motion, I second.
It was my motion, actually, my suggestion.
Okay, shall we take a roll call? No.
I mean, is there any more discussion about that? Because that's a pretty important decision to make.
Yeah.
Doreen, you're on mute, I think. I don't know.
Oh, okay. Yes.
Well, sorry. I just shared that we had a first, and it sounds like, Carla, you made a motion to, I can say, to open March 31st in accordance with, it, I'm just going to say, management's plan, the Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday cohort for 4 hours with Friday remote. And then it sounds like, Denise, you had seconded that.
Correct.
Okay. Correct.
Right. And then any discussion?
Okay.
Other board members.
Does it look like it?
No.
All right. We can
do a roll call.
Okay. So this is to approve that plan. Dixie?
Yes.
Carla?
Yes.
Christy?
Yes.
Lily?
Yeah.
Crystal?
Yes, you're still,
and then Denise.
Yes.
Motion passes to open for, I keep saying open school, but it's truly open for on-site instruction on March 31st under a hybrid model for 4 hours a day.
Yep. Yay!
Yay! Great discussion. Thank you, everyone.
I for one, and I know Bill concurs with me that although this is going to be a challenge and a learning curve, one, it's going to make us smarter because it's another set of skills we're going to have. Even if we're forced to do it, it's going to make us smarter. But two, we get to see those kids again and they get to see us. And I know I speak for the teachers and the classified staff, even if we can't put our hand on their shoulder or give them a hug, just to be in the room with them and to be able to visually connect with parents. It's, I am so unbelievably happy and grateful to the board. Thank you.
Yes.
Yay.
And I just want to say thank you to Shannon and Bill, because I know that this has been a very dynamic year, to say the least. And I have asked a lot at very, I want to say, with minimal notice, like, we got to jump on a meeting. We got to make this happen. We got to read this document. It has to post by tomorrow. So, never mind. You don't need to read it. We're going to do something else. So again, I want to say my tremendous thank you to both of you. I know that, you know, I just have to connect to you two, but you've got a whole team behind you that you have to get on board and to really make sure that things happen, along with the students and the families as well. So my tremendous thanks to both of you.
Well, I will gladly accept that thanks, but only if we keep Doreen in the loop with that thanks as well, because the three of us are a team. And if Bill and I have a headache, Doreen has the same headache. And if Bill and I have a celebration, Doreen has the same celebration.
And I've got an idea.
Bill and Shannon, do you need help with anything?
What's that?
Do you need help with anything?
Carla, if you could figure out how to extend the day by about 12 or 13 hours, that would be... That would be fantastic.
Well, can do that.
I think we're all good, Miss Carly. You know, I think we're going to roll, you know. But as I was saying, you know, why don't we renew the charter as well during all this?
Right.
We don't have enough to do, right, Bill?
Yeah. Right.
Right.
Yeah. And I know that April probably is going to be our public hearing for that. Knock on wood.
Okay, we're there. Well, sounds good to me.
And we renewed San Bernardino's through it all too.
Yeah.
Have a good day.
And yep. I'm very confident that, you know, in 10 years or however long, Bill and I, Doreen, are going to look back on this and say we rose to the occasion. you know, we rose to the challenge. We yes. we did it yes. and we did it well.
Yes. All right.
Question. So will teachers be provided with the PPE, or will they
yes.
be having to provide their own, or?
Well, when you say that, what do you mean by that? You know, I mean, you know, we have masks if they want them, but I think everybody at this point has their own mask, you know?
Right.
I
mean,
I think the important thing are the shields for the students and the cleaning protocol by the custodians and, you know, the support that we can provide them, you know, as well as even providing them shields as well for their desks, you know, I yes. mean, and if there's anything that they need, you know, and that's another discussion point that we will be having this Friday to get ready for that, to inquire as to what they need. You know, part of that too will be to put together a supply list, since students will not be able to really bring things in or take things out except for that Chromebook. You know, but, you know, we'll have to buy, you know, pencils and notebooks and things of that nature as well to have in the classroom. So that discussion will be taking place this Friday, where we will do a needs assessment and gather, you know, a list of what it is we have to get, you know, and that'll be taking place at the end of this Friday.
And we actually, for San Bernardino, we had that discussion last Friday. I have my Staples order ready to go pending this meeting. All I have to do is hit submit and the supply order goes. I did order the teachers, of course, as most adults do, have their masks already, but I'm also ordering face shields, the kind with the headband, and it yes. comes down. So I'm ordering that, gloves for staff, a mask, paper masks for staff, paper masks for children if they forget theirs. And then one of the things that we did in December with the County Cares funds is we pre-ordered, I call them foggers, but they're like electrostatic sprayers, I think. The kind that the grocery stores use to disinfect the carts, you know, in a very quick minute. And so those, I've worked with the vendor that we're using, and we're going to have those on site in the next few days. So every staff member will have one of those so they can disinfect their classroom or particular desk or, you know, whatever resource they might be using very, very quickly.
Bill?
Yes?
IVEDC, they are giving out masks, shields, hand sanitizers. Do you want me to ask if we can get some?
Yes, please do. Shields would be fine. You know, I've purchased a bank of paper masks, but, you know, we have about 300-400 of those, but more of those would be fine. So why don't you reach out, and then we can talk, you know, after you've spoken to see what I have to do next, okay? That would be very helpful. And Ms. Shannon, if you want to send me your list of things that your teachers came up with as far as supplies and things so that I can be armed for Friday, I'd appreciate that.
Sure.
Great.
Okay.
Bill, send me an email because by the time the meeting's over, I'm going to forget.
Okay. I got it.
Well, I guess we're ready for the next.
Move on to the teachers' reports.
Okay, I gotta get mine up.
I feel like we talked a lot.
I know.
Your focus has been, right?
Since Bill has to pull his up, I'm happy to go first, okay. If that's okay.
Right. Yes, please do.
I'm not going to lie at all. Not a tremendous amount has changed since the last board meeting, mostly because we were preparing for the eventuality that we go into hybrid learning. So that has pretty much been our focus and our discussion, looking what students need. Our literacy planning committee has continued their training and a very, very in-depth needs assessment. And our next meeting will be... I'm sorry. It was a very, very in-depth critical. Doreen, what word am I thinking of? Cause.
Root analysis.
Root analysis. Thank you. And then the next meeting will be the needs assessment to look at really increasing the rigor of our literacy instruction, whether it's staffing or curriculum or training or all three or whatever it might be. Teachers are continuing to do their intervention on a very regular basis. They are seeing a lot of good results coming from our newer intervention program, SIPS, and that seems to be working very, very well. South Coast is starting up a new whole class program focused on resiliency and conflict resolution, and we have a lot of parents willing to participate in that for their students. Otherwise, it's the you know, always focused on achievement, always focused on engagement, trying to make the class as engaging as possible so students want to come to improve attendance. I'm still doing regular drop-ins and walkthroughs. I finished the last round of formal observation or informal observations, had the one-on-one meetings with the teachers to discuss it, discuss their strengths, where they needed support. And I think I mentioned this last time, we also had one-on-one meetings to set MAP goals for our spring administration. And so we're going to open up the MAP testing window as soon as we get back from spring break. And then we'll give some teachers some time to prep the students for that and then administer that test. So we should have those results by our May meeting. I've been working a lot with Doreen on budgetary issues. Our current enrollment is 173. So we have lost mostly in kindergarten. We've lost a lot of enrollments, but I'm expecting that to pick up. We have started our enrollment process for next year. I'm continuing the partnership with the preschool program within Volunteers of America. And we are communicating with those parents to get their students enrolled and set up and ready to go for the 21-22 school year. So I'm very confident that for the next school year, we'll be back close to our enrollment at 200. And we did another monthly food box giveaway for families, which I'm very happy. And I actually completed a survey for them. And so they gave me extra food for the families. So that was pretty good. And I think that like a lot of it was just going to the next step of what we've already been doing and doing what needed to be done for our unique situation this year. Is there anything else I can comment on or that the board might have questions on for clarification? Then I'm going to go ahead and hand it over to Mr. Anderson.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Shannon. You know, as Shannon was saying, you know, so much of the continuation of the things that we're working on, we've been drilling down on the RTI process, you know, coming up with a scope and sequence for the school. A group of teachers put together an outline of sorts that they can work with, and we've been working with that in our meetings. We will be having, after the spring break, several two professional developments from Solution Tree with regard to assisting us in drilling down with RTI and helping us with our plan. And that'll take place after we do our last benchmark assessment. So like Ms. Shannon was saying, you know, we will be beginning our last assessment, and then we'll be using that data to drill down on and see what kind of a plan for intervention we can come up with. As she's speaking about the enrollment piece, my front office and I have been talking about a plan of action to go out into the different preschools in the area, putting together some kind of not just paper goods, but maybe another, you know, video presentation of things that we do that we can have available and to get out in the community more, you know, and part of it is just the focus on recognizing that we will have a lot of learning loss. So we want to be prepared as educators to address that as best we can. So those are the real focusing things. We're continuing with that, the intervention programs that we have. And you know, just looking forward to coming back and seeing where we go with that. You know, so it's going to be just looking at data, using data more effectively, and then developing intervention programs that target student needs. And, you know, that's kind of what we're really focusing on here. End of the third quarter is coming up very soon. If I'm not mistaken, it's at the end of March. So, you know, we're looking at this like, let's gear up, tighten our belts for the fourth quarter and get everything we got. You know, that's it. Questions? No.
Any questions or discussion on that? No. From anyone? Okay. All right. Do we have another item?
Book closing? Comments?
Okay, so we'd, okay. Okay, does anyone have any closing comments?
I'd just like to ask the new board members, and now I think been at three meetings, and what their experience is like. I mean, is it working for you? Anything we could do to make your experience a little bit more productive? Just wanted to kind of get that feedback, Madam Chair.
So far, it's a great experience for me. I like that everything's in order, very organized, very structured. It's a lot of input. I think it's great. I'm glad I'm on board. It's a great experience for me. Thank you.
Oh, and Ms. Garcia, we will be reaching out to you too to help us with our enrollment drive, okay?
You could count on me. Holler. I know.
Thank you. We will.
Okay. Well, I just wanted to check in on that. Really appreciate it. We really appreciate you investing your time in being involved. And we want to just make sure it's a meaningful experience for all of you in engagement.
It is. Thank you. Professionally and as a parent. Thank you.
Okay. Any other discussion or comments, questions?
I can just see being out in the community. I mean, I've been to a couple of board meetings where we've been together, either inside or outside with distancing and stuff. It's actually so great, you know, to see people face to face. Right, Lily? Yeah. So you can feel people are getting lighter and feeling better and hopeful, yeah. You know, that we getting back to normal, even though we know it's going to take a little while.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
So any other comments? Okay. It's 7:11. We can go ahead and adjourn.
Right.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate your time.
Thank you all so much.
Bye. Bye.
Yeah. Okay.
Everyone, bye-bye. Have a great night.
You too.
Yeah.
Yikes. Okay.